Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
We thank you all in both their names with love. As-salamu alaykum. For those of you who may wish to participate in our discussion today, you're welcome to call in at 347-989-0855. That's 347-989-0855. Or you can hit us up with a message at Hiram1555@yahoo.com. That's Hiram1555@yahoo.com. As always, we like to thank you for giving us another day of your time and another hour of your day. We like to thank you here and around the globe, right here, right now, for joining us, and those of you who will download us later. Brothers and sisters, we are now at a critical and volatile time in the world's history. I want to let you know that this show, Suit Up for the Approaching Storm, is now live. Thank you for joining us. Now, I wanted to skip all of the other formalities for real because I wanted to talk to you all. Everywhere we look and everything that we can see points towards the total collapse and fall of the American empire, and not just that, but the total implosion of the global order that has been dominated by the Western or the white world. I know some of you don't want to hear that because you have fallen in love thinking that you can make the system work. I want to say this because I say this often on the show, specifically and especially to the so-called Muslims who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who believe that entering the political system will get you justice, who believe that entering politics will change the system. Now, I want to ask you something. If the system is inherently corrupt from its core, inherently racist from its core, inherently biased from its core, from the core out, you know, and from out back into the core, we see this with the slaughtering of black people left and right. It seems like if it was not inherently racist and biased, this would not be the order of the day, and more people would be lashing out, right? But since it is the order of the day, to integrate in a system that has been predicated on the extermination of non-white people and the exploitation of non-white people would be a treacherous move by you, especially in the time of the approaching doom of America. As I said before on one show, and we're going to get into some clips, we're going to get into some articles, we're going to get into a lot of this stuff to try to bring home that it's time for you to prepare. It's been time for you to prepare for the approaching storm. America is in trouble. And being the greatest pillar and the strongest pillar and the wealthiest pillar of white power and Western colonialism, this is a warning shot that's been sent across the bow to the entire white world. And I use these terms. I know some of you, he comes too blunt with white and this, and it's a division. Well, you will understand and you will see why we're talking about this, because this is a world, you cannot deny that this world is set up and dominated by white people. There's no way you can deny that. There's absolutely no way. Every institution globally over the last 100 or so years have been set up by and maintained by white politics, white economics, and white military power. There's no refuting that, right? And to show you keywords, and we're gonna, I gotta connect this stuff, but to show you keywords that they use, the civilized world, right? Or the international community. Whenever America or Europe doesn't get their way, or China is pushing against the international community. Well, we have 80-some or 90-some countries non-aligned, right? And then you have dozens of countries that are on China's side. But you only have the United States and Europe backing each other. How in the hell can that be the international community? Huh? See, these are white supremacist terms to show you that you don't matter when they use terms, the international community. They're talking about the Western world and those whom they deem as ones who matter. But all of this arrogance, all of this greed, the ineptitude of governments and politicians are leading to a great blowback effect. A great blowback effect. And brothers and sisters, I'm telling you, it's going to be terrific. I want to go to something as we're talking. Where's message to the black man? Follow with me, brothers and sisters. I have to lay a base every time. For those of you who are new to the show, I have to lay the base. Then we go into the clips and the articles to prove what we're saying, okay? Now, on page 273 of Message to the Black Man. Oh, man, that's beautiful. And 272, no. I was reading a different chapter, but when I look down, it's talking about this too. Now, on page 273, bear with me, brothers and sisters. There's a chapter called America is Falling. Her doom is sealed, okay? This, I don't think you know the depths of that chapter, because some of you read this and then you still go out and try to participate in her politics. You integrate into her culture and her system. Well, if America doom, if America's falling and her doom has been sealed, and you integrate into a falling republic, a falling empire, a falling nation, and you empire and you integrate and assimilate into a republic that doom has been sealed on the order of God, then you are sealing your own doom, right? I'm asking you these things. I'm talking to you because we seems like we don't use common sense today because we have the herd mentality. We want to be accepted by all these people. We want to be considered successful. We want to be considered somebody in the society. So we're willing to overlook the very safety of our lives, which is insanity. Well, let's go to this chapter real quick, okay? Listen to what Elijah Muhammad says to us. I compare the fall of America with the fall of ancient Babylon. Stop right there. That one sentence, and I'm not even done with the sentence. Listen, I compare the fall of America with the fall of ancient Babylon. Now, to understand the depths of what he's saying, one has to research the history of Babylon, of ancient Babylon, right? And if we look at the history of ancient Babylon, she was arrogant. She was boastful. She was prideful. She was considered the global power or pantheon at the time. Right? Is that not right? She held sacred vessels within herself. Look at America. Let's look at America. The sacred vessels in America, which is you and I. Look at the arrogance that she speaks to the domestic people. And she says that the people who are protesting the murder of black people are domestic terrorists. Terrorists, right? This was, she didn't say the police who committed the act of violence and murder are the terrorists. This is what Trump says. He deems black people, and we know that the people who are committing the who are starting and stoking the tensions are white people. You can see the pictures, but then black people are easily led into the stores right after the stores are smashed and all of this stuff. We already know that, we're going to go into depth on that on the Red Pill Diaries this weekend. We're going to talk about a lot of that stuff. But look at how she reacts. She is mad at the people who are angry for being slaughtered and hunted down on the street. She's not mad at the slaughterers. She's not mad at those who are doing the hunting. She's mad at those who are the victim and the prey. She is depraved of common sense. Do you understand? This is the delusion that would fall on America. Right? Trump says, now I want you to see the arrogance and the hypocrisy of America. Defunding the police, that's ludicrous, right? This is what he said. But then he says, we're going to withhold funding for those cities who are protesting against police brutality and violence. You don't want to defund the police but you're going to defund the people who are protesting the viciousness of the police. You know why he's doing that? Because the police are the enforcers domestically to the imperial policies that are put on you. So why would he defund his, I could say, face stompers, because that's what they are. They put their boot on your face and stomp. You see, all of this is setting America for a great fall. And if you look at her domestic policies and how she treats her ex-slaves and some people of color, and then you look into her international policies, and it mirrors it back. She tells Hezbollah, which is the largest political group in Lebanon, we won't accept Lebanese participation, Hezbollah participation in Lebanese politics. First of all, how in the hell do you even come up with this? Huh? Isn't Lebanon a sovereign nation, an independent territory and country? So how in the hell can you and Macron demand that the Lebanese people ignore their choices for governance? This is the height of arrogance. Look at the history of ancient Babylon and look at the history of modern-day America. This is what I'm talking to you about. To go across the globe and tell others what they should do and should not do. And when others buck up against her arrogance, they are aggressively pursuing nuclear weapons. Here's a nation that has thousands of nuclear weapons. But you get one to stop her from busting your nose, they are aggressively pursuing something. We need to sanction them. The insanity of these people. And you go right along with them because you fall hook, line, and sinker with their propaganda organs, which is called the mainstream and the alternative media, because all of them are working towards the same end. And what end is that? It's to preserve white dominance and white power. Go look at the stuff that they say. Huh? You know I'm telling you the truth. Suit up for the approaching storm. So Elijah Muhammad says, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad says, I compare the fall of America with the fall of ancient Babylon. Her wickedness, meaning her sins, is the same as history shows of ancient Babylon. Babylon is suddenly fallen, and the destroyed howl for her. Take balm for her pains, if so she may be healed. Jeremiah 51:81. What were the sins of ancient Babylon, Elijah Muhammad asked. According to history. See, then he goes into the historical perspective. He asks the question, then he used history as a guide. Listen to what he says. According to history, she was rich. She was proud, and her riches increased her corruption. She had every merchandise that the nations wanted or demanded. Isn't that what America had in her greatness? And now it's being she's being deprived of that? Her ships carried merchandise to the ports of every nation at the height of American dominance, right? She was the largest manufacturer, the largest exporter. Had the most ships on the sea transporting goods and services, and also her military might. Right? Is that not right? Elijah Muhammad goes further and says, she was a drunkard. Right? Wine and strong drinks were in her daily practice. She was filled with adultery and murder. She persecuted and killed the people of God. What? You see this every day on TV. You see it on the news. You see it on the internet. You see it in social media. The everyday slaughtering of black people. And then the justification from those who have benefited from the oppressor's boots on your neck. It's a crying shame that you want to integrate into a system like that. Your ancestors would be turning in their graves if they understood what you're doing today. It's a shame. But let's go further. She killed the saints and prophets of God, of Allah. Hate and filthiness. Listen to this. Hate and filthiness. Gambling. sports of every evil, as you practice in America, were practiced in Babylon. What they call America, the sports capital of the world. Is that not right? I was looking at an article, it was last night, I believe, and we're talking about hate, okay, right here. So this, what was it, this apparel clothing line in England did a all-black commercial. I want you to understand something. Listen to this, good. An all-black commercial. Before that, they had did an all Arab commercial during the month of Ramadan, right? Where they were showing people celebrating Ramadan and all this stuff. So they recently did an all-black commercial. This is in the UK, and the people were outraged. We feel discriminated against. That you, how dare you have an all-black commercial? Now they don't say nothing about the 99% of the commercials that are all white. See the hate. And it's a reflection of what goes on in America, right? The same thing goes on in America on a daily basis. These are the two daughters, right, of Babylon. They mirror each other back. Man, I tell you, let's go further. He says, hate and filthiness, gambling, sport of every evil, as you practice in America, will practice in Babylon. Only America is modern and much worse. God, now think about this. If America is modern and much worse, think about how angry God was with ancient Babylon. Think of what he did to ancient Babylon. And she was primitive compared to what America is doing in her technology, in her evil, and in her wickedness. Ancient Babylon could not have done what America is doing today. She was just the basis for what America's blueprint is today. He says, ancient Babylon was destroyed by her neighboring nations. All right? And this is why America is so angered by Iran's standing up to her arrogance. This is why America is so angered and had to overthrow the Honduran government under when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. This is why America, I would say, killed Hugo Chavez and are trying to overthrow Maduro. This is why America went after Evo Morales in Bolivia. This is why America went after Gaddafi and went after the Great Lion of Africa, the Honorable Robert Mugabe. This is why America has gone after President Bashar al-Assad of Syria. This is why America is trying to balkanize Pakistan and surround China and Russia because of the independence from the empire. You understand? Her arrogance, and the she knows that these nations are plotting her downfall. What she says the other day, we view China as the greatest strategic threat to America. Matter of fact, before we go into any clips, and before I read any more of that, I'm going to prove my point to you, okay? Let's see. There's an article on Flight Global, right? There's an article on Flight Global. I was reading this article yesterday, and this article talks about ruthless aircraft buying decisions needed to avoid defeat. And this comes from the U.S. Air Force, okay? Now, the article is not super, super long, okay? But there are certain points in this article that should be addressed with the point that we're talking about, how she is trying to encircle China and trying to balkanize Pakistan and trying to encircle Russia because she views them as strategic threats. You understand? I want you to listen to this, okay? I'm glad we're talking on this part already, because I had no intention on even talking about this right here. But because the conversation has gone this way, I want to bring something to you, okay? Because she looks at these nations as her greatest threats, and she looks at them as strategic competitors, okay? Remember those words, strategic competitor. Because if you don't, they're talking over you, okay? Uh-oh, excuse me. Let me go to this real quick. Give me a second. Here we go, right here. Uh-oh. Hold on 1 second, you all. Wait an hour. My computer wants to update. And I had to stop it from restarting the computer, so I had to schedule. I don't know why I scheduled it for right then and there to update everything, but I had to stop that. But let's go to something. This is an article from Flight Global. It's by Garrett Ream, and it reads like this: U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff General Charles Brown declared in a recently released strategy paper that the service must accelerate change or lose. The accelerate change or lose approach to buying aircraft, weapons, and subsystems is being driven, listen to this, is being driven by increasingly sophisticated weapons being developed and fielded by China and Russia, Brown said on August 31st. What's important about that? Because in the lecture given to the nation in the 70s by the most honorable Elijah Muhammad called the Theology of Time, the messenger of Allah said that when these nations go to war, talking about at the end of America, that America's enemies and her rivals will have the same thing that she has. And some would even have better weaponry than America. Right? Let's read that sentence over again. The accelerate change or lose approach to buying aircraft, weapons, and subsystems is being driven by increasingly sophisticated weapons being developed and fielded by who? China and Russia, Brown said on the 31st of August. Now listen, brothers and sisters, I'm going to read this, and we're gonna put it into perspective. Then we're going to try to transition to a little the economics, because this is what this show is about, the economic collapse. But I have to put this here as the base, and sometimes it takes 30, 40 minutes to just to lay the base. So bear with me, especially those of you who are new to the show, all right? But let's go further. It says, listen, competitors, especially China, have made and continue aggressive efforts to negate long-enduring U.S. warfighting advantages and challenge the United States' interests and geopolitical position. What is that saying right there? For those of you who don't, it says that China has aggressively pursued her military power, right, to negate any advantage of U.S. warfighting. And listen to this. And challenge the United States' interests and geopolitical position. You know what they're talking about? To challenge America's hegemony, global dominance. That's what he's saying. But if you don't understand these key words, they're talking over you. Let's go further. While the nation was focused on countering violent extremist organizations, our competitors focused on defeating us. What else were they supposed to focus on? Huh? Being defeated by you? You see the silliness in their thought? And this is a revelation to them that their competitors and their enemies are focusing their military to defeat America. That's a revelation to them. Because remember, this is from the head of the Air Force. Then let's go further. They have studied, resourced, and introduced systems specifically designed to defeat the U.S. Air Force capabilities that have underpinned, listen to this, the American way of war for a generation. You heard that? They have studied, resourced, and introduced systems strategically designed to defeat the U.S. Air Force capabilities that have underpinned the American way of war. Not the American way of life. The American way of war. For a generation. The American way of war, quote unquote, this is what it is right here on the paragraph, quote unquote, the American way of war typically has started with achieving aerial supremacy, which gives cover for land and naval forces to fight. It also is governed by a strategy that aims to keep fighting away from the USA. Remember what Elijah Muhammad said in that message to the black man, right? Listen to this. He says, And this is very important for what you just heard. He says, ancient Babylon was destroyed by her neighboring nations. Now, listen to this. The American way of war typically has started by achieving aerial supremacy, which gives cover for land and naval forces to fight. It also is governed by a strategy that aims to keep fighting away from the USA, meaning we're going to fight in their lands, and we're going to bomb them over there to keep them from over here. But this is no longer the case, according to the U.S. Air Force General. The article goes further, and listen, I just had to bring this up since we were talking about America's intransigence and her arrogance and her hubris. But listen to what it says. However, China and Russia have invested heavily in anti-aircraft missile batteries to shoot down U.S. Air Force aircraft. Well, what else are they going to do? Just allow America to just steep into their skies and just take over? And it says, as well as long-range ballistic and cruise missiles that can destroy aircraft on the tarmac and hit the mainland USA. Both countries are developing nuclear-tipped hypersonic missiles. Future warfare will not remain far from our shores. What did Elijah Muhammad say? Ancient Babylon was destroyed by her neighboring nations. This is what this general said. Because if you don't pay attention, it goes right over your head. Future warfare will not remain far from our shores. We must be prepared to address our competitors' attempt to hold the U.S. homeland at risk with unconventional, conventional, and even nuclear force, writes Brown. Tomorrow's airmen are more likely to fight in highly contested environments and must be prepared to fight through combat attrition rates and risks to the nation that are more akin to World War II era than the uncontested environment to which we have since become accustomed. Okay? So he sees something coming closely down the pipe, right? This is why he's making his revelations known to the people he's talking to, because he sees something in the theater of war that America is no longer the dominant power. All right? I want you to understand that. It's going to be connected with the economics, okay? So pay close attention to what I'm saying to you all. When I tell you something, it's for you to keep it at memory up there for later, because it's a connecting point, okay? Now go further. Let me take a sip of this lemon water. It says, pace of innovation. Brown adds that adversaries are developing weapons faster than the USA can come up with counter weapons, tactics, and strategies. So remember when Elijah Muhammad said that these nations would have the same and sometimes better weapons than America, right? They are admitting this in this article. Brown adds that adversaries are developing weapons faster than the U.S. can come up with, or counter weapons, tactics, and strategies. While we and industry previously enjoyed the benefit of time, you see how that time comes in there? Remember I kept telling y'all on the other shows, time. The time is against them, right? And I said no matter what we're talking about, whether it's economics or politics or geopolitics, we're talking about the time. Listen to what he says. While we and industry previously enjoyed the benefit of time, when the U.S. Air Force dominance seemed unassailable, we are now seeing competitors outpace our current decision structures and fielding timelines. What is he saying? That our enemies are surpassing us in innovation, technology, and weaponry, and we no longer have the luxury of time. This is what he's saying. I'm not making this up. You hear me reading it right off the pages. You can go to Flight Global and read the article yourself. It says, absent change, our presumed advantage will continue to erode, and the U.S. Air Force will not be adequately prepared for the warfighting challenges in contested environments. To regain its advantage, now, you hear what he said? To regain its advantage. I want you to understand those words there. Now, listen to this. According to the dictionary, according to Google Dictionary, the word regain is to obtain possession or use of something again after losing it. To see, brothers and sisters, I'm telling you, you have to pay attention to how they place words. It is very, very important that you do, or else you'll get lost in the shuffle. Listen to what this Air Force General said, the highest Air Force General. To regain its advantages. Who advantages? America's advantages. So for her to regain them, what is she saying right there in that word? That means she has lost them. She no longer enjoys strategic advantage against China and Russia. All right? Is that not right? Because the word regain means obtain possession or use of something again after losing it. You hear? So now, since you got the meaning of the word regain, now you understand that America, with all that bluster and all of the bravado on TV, is no longer light years ahead of her competitors. She has lost strategic primacy over them. So it says, to regain its advantages, the U.S. Air Force needs to recognize the future of technology will not likely come from Department of Defense funded or originated projects. He says, the U.S. Air Force has placed an emphasis in recent years on needing to adapt its acquisition process to take advantage of commercial technologies, as well as to welcome new ideas from innovative but non-traditional defense companies such as venture capital backed startups. Now, I read that fast because that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Now, it says, I'm trying to get to something, okay? Because it is very important. Let me see if I, because the article, I have a few more. Let's see. Let me scoot down, because I'm trying to get some for you, and I know you don't have the patience. It's only a few more paragraphs, maybe six or seven short paragraphs, if you would bear with me. If you bear with me, I'll try to read it fast for you, explain it to you, and then we'll connect the dots with the economics. Because remember that America is facing budget shortfalls. She is constantly running budget deficits and trade deficits. Therefore, she cannot spend money, and she's allocated money to certain things, like when she allocated for this project to build a ship. Hammers are costing. The regular hammer that you go buy for $10 or $5 is costing $200, $300. One screw, $12. And you know it takes millions of screws to hold a ship together. It's just madness. In the corruption and ineptitude of these people who call themselves the wise people and strategic thinkers. But anyway, let's go on, because I want to play some clips, and it's very important that I get some of these clips off to y'all. And listen, brothers and sisters, if we don't get through a lot of the clips, what I'm going to do, either Friday or Saturday, we'll have a live show on the Red Pill Diaries, and we'll broadcast it on YouTube so that you'll be able to see it if you want to, and then we'll try to come back with a part two of this where we'll be playing some more clips and stuff. Okay, I try to get that off to you. And if you have not subscribed, I really appreciate if you do, brothers and sisters. Do that. What's $5? What's $12? You spend that in a McDonald's Happy Meal or something like that. I want to thank all of you who have already subscribed. It shows me the support for and the belief in what we're doing with the Star and Crescent Report, the Hiring 1555 blog, and the Red Pill Diaries. Now, I want you all who haven't or who keeps waiting on to go and subscribe. Show the love back. Do your part. That'll be part of your zakat or your charity, okay? Because it's incumbent upon all to give charity. And what better way to give charity than to uphold and promote the truth. Now let's go further. He says, in particular, Brown says that the Pentagon's effort to develop a battlefield communications network called the Joint All-Domain Command and Control will be vital to winning. The Pentagon's aim to use the network to coordinate faster-moving operations between the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy, U.S. Marine Corps, and the U.S. Army. In theory, the pace of operations would allow the U.S. forces to overwhelm or outmaneuver Chinese or Russian forces. The joint all-domain command and control system might one day also allow closer coordination with foreign militaries. We must consider how to achieve improved interoperability and data sharing with our closest allies and partners so that we can fly, fight, and win together, Brown says. Okay, now we've got rid of the mundane stuff. Now let's go. Brown notes that rising threats to the U.S. and likely declining or flat defense budgets will force tough choices. How is the, when you're getting $750 billion, then you get another emergency spending fund of about $400 billion. Then you get a black budget of about $500 to $600 billion. And then you get something else, emergency stimulus for the military, which is about $300 or $400 billion, leading to over $2 trillion. More than all of the nations, the top 10, 20 nations combined. How in the hell is that flat? You're just not using it right. Right? But in their mind, they're right. Now, China spends about $200 billion on this. America's spending $2 trillion when you add up the official budgets and then all of these emergency spending budgets. It's $2 trillion or more. When you add up Russia's is, I think, between 40-some and 50-some billion. And yet they are making more progress with what they have than America, which is spending trillions. That shows you the time in which we're living in. That shows you that America, she's in a stagnant position and she's steadily declining. That's what empires do. So it says, Brown notes that the rising threats to the USA and likely declining or flat defense budgets will force tough choices that will cause the U.S. Air Force to throw away old weapons in favor of more useful new ones. Likely future budget pressure will require the most difficult force structures decisions in generations. We cannot shy away from these decisions. Now, you see how we get into the economics? Huh? Listen again to what he said. Likely future budget pressures will require the most difficult force structures decisions in generations. See, at one time, America didn't worry about that. She just spent whatever she wanted. But now nations are dumping her money. But let's go further. We cannot shy away from these decisions, he says. In order to inform this ruthless prioritization, we must also consider our decisions in the context of the key competitions over time. As a service, decisions on our missions and capabilities must be informed on how they fare against our understanding of competitors' theories of victories, ways of war, and force development strategies. Now we're getting closer and closer. Internal deadlines and traditional equipment buying practices can no longer be the measuring stick of Department of Defense programs, meaning that the weapons that they're turning out are trash. That's what he's talking about. They're trash. Then he goes further and says, cost, see, we're talking about economics. Schedule, that's time. And performance metrics alone are no longer sufficient metrics of acquisition success. He says, we must be able to account for the interactive nature of competition and continuously assess ourselves relative to our adversaries' adaptations. In recent years, the U.S. Air Force has experimented with new ways of granting contracts. It's talking about contract stuff. I'm trying to get to something. It says, let's see, I'm going to skip down. All right. All right, we're almost at the end. It says, we must make a compelling case to external stakeholders backed by defensible analysis and evidence to divest or take risks in legacy missions and capabilities, he writes. The U.S. Air Force must work differently with other departments of defense stakeholders, Congress, and traditional and emerging industry partners to streamline processes and incentivize intelligent risk-taking in support of the warfighter and the nation. Ultimately, Brown says these reforms are do-or-die necessities. If the U.S. Air Force fails to adapt fast enough, wargaming suggests mission failure and unacceptable risk to the joint force. Listen what he says. The rules-based, quote-unquote, international order so many have fought to defend may disintegrate, and our national interests will be significantly challenged. Unless we accelerate the changes we need, the U.S. Air Force will be ill-prepared to compete, deter, and win. Stop right there. When they use this, quote-unquote, the rules-based international order, they're talking about the Western or white-dominated order. So he's telling you that it's under threat and it's collapsing. He's telling you that the economics no longer matches American power. He's telling you that the time is against American power. And he's telling you that her strategic competitors and rivals have surpassed her in many of the fields that America once dominated in. And he constantly kept bringing up who? China. And what did Elijah Muhammad tell you? That the yellow man of Asia would chase down this white American man in every field that he once dominated in. Now you tell me whether or not Elijah Muhammad told you the truth. Huh? I'm asking you. I'm asking you. Tell me whether or not he told you the truth. Because that comes from the highest Air Force general. Huh? The economics. They can no longer spend infinitum. They can no longer do that. I'm telling you. You better suit up for the approaching storm. Before we transition, let me bring in Brother Rashid because I see his hand up. I didn't see your hand up because, unlike on our Red Pill Diaries show, when I'm reading articles, I can't see the dashboard. I'm on another screen, okay? So let me bring in Brother Rashid. I know he has something to say. Let's see if it'll allow me to click on. Brother Rashid is not allowing me to. Oh, there we go. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam. Can you hear me?
Yeah, brother, we hear you loud and clear. Go ahead.
Brother, say it ain't so, brother. Say it ain't so. You mean America is not as dominant as she once was? You know, used to be when all she had to do was look at some other country and the cat would run and hide up under the bed.
Yep.
Just by looking at them, it shows you, like you were saying, exactly what the messenger said is true. That Allah was going to put his enemies. It's a take what a messenger is talking about. He said, how is Allah going to get rid of America's big old mighty military? And the messenger said, you see, he's got enemies. And we intend to put him to war with all of his enemies around the world.
Yes.
And he got a whole lot of enemies, brother. You know, the white man always talking about keep America safe. Why should America, you know, they keep America safe? The American people got to feel secure and safe because they done a whole lot of dirt around the world. And
yeah.
if it's justice, everybody should be at their throat, right?
Yep, that's right.
Where on planet Earth have you not committed murder and mayhem and overthrowing governments and robbing and raping and pillaging? You know, the robber, when he's robbing somebody, is fine. But when retribution comes, he's scared. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
But go on, brother. I'm not going to keep you too long. But it's very good to hear what the messenger said 30, 40, 50, 70 years ago. Now we are here. But as I said before, when the messenger was teaching us these things, it's basically talking about the 60 to not exceed 70 years of extension. That's the reason why when he was saying stuff back in the 60s and 50s, everybody could ignore it because it wasn't right there in front of your face. But now it's right there. Only us that love the messenger and keep his words will be able to go and read it and put it in front of what's happening. The other people ignored the man. When he so-called died, getting rid of him, and we're real happy that he's gone. But his words are still here. And like the minion said, the Savior told him he's going to live up to every last word. So what the messenger was teaching, this comes from the God himself.
That's right.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaykum salam. That's right. That brother is absolutely right. And this is what I'm trying to do. This is why I teach you the way that I teach you on this show. Because I don't want anybody to say I took anything, whether it's an article or whether it's the messenger word, out of context. And then I put them side by side and I give you the definition of what they're saying. So you can't say I altered it. You can't say that I'm lying or I'm embellishing something. You got to look directly straight ahead at the truth because that's what I'm presenting. I don't care about your religious persuasion or your political affiliation or none of that. What I care about is getting you the truth the way it's supposed to be put to you, right? Without addition, without subtraction, and to showing and proving that this little man from Georgia, his words hold so much weight, and they weigh with the weight of God. This is what I'm showing you today, okay? Have I lied to you all? Nope. Everything that you heard me tell you on the show, hadn't it come to fruition? Yep. Even when it wasn't the popular thing to do, hadn't it come to fruition? Yep. Even when I was being hammered by so-called brothers and sisters, and I stuck to my guns, and I am being proven the victor, as Elijah Muhammad says, that if you stay with me, you will be the winner, living or dead. And so you're starting to see that. See, I believe his words. And therefore, I'm able to teach you and prove to you in real time. Real time. You can't say that that they didn't just say what Elijah Muhammad said because we broke down the definitions. But when he's talking to his people and he knows that he has a couple wannabe white folks listening, he talks over their head. He talks over their head, and he uses slang or dialogue or dialect that his people can understand because he knows that you don't take the time to go into definitions of words, okay? But, so I want to go to something. So we're talking about the military, and we're talking about the economics and the time, right? I was reading an article, and I'm not going to go into the article. I was reading an article directly, I forget who it was published by, but it was a real good article, and it was from the Chinese perspective. And the Chinese were talking about how America is losing out in everything that they were trying to hold China back in, and now they're trying to play the Taiwan card. But the economics is against it because Taiwan, which is America even recognizes Taiwan as being part of China, Taiwan needs the mainland for economics. Australia, they need China for economics. Everybody that America is trying to use against China, they need China because China is their largest trade partner or their largest investor. So they're caught in a catch-22, and America has nothing to give them because she's constantly running deficits, running debt, borrowing from other people. And in this article, the Chinese specifically mentioned America's strategy for the island chain. Remember when I read to you all what Elijah Muhammad said about how America would try to hem them in, the yellow man of Asia? And I told you how what the messenger was talking about is about this first and second island chain. That's why she has not left Japan, because she needs those island chains to block China from her breakout capacity. You understand? And in this article, the Chinese are saying that America's moves to hem China in have failed, and she's desperate, and she's frantically trying to use Taiwan and use Australia against her and try to stir up problems with Japan and South Korea and trying to get North Korea into this bluster and this frantic act so that she can justify her moves there. But the Chinese said they have known this. Remember, Elijah Muhammad told you this, too, that the yellow man have known this. And they have made preparations for this, right? In this article, the Chinese said almost the exact same thing. I said, it's something, isn't it, to see this stuff happening. And they talk about how America's policy is failing and how America herself has used all her cards because she needs China. Listen to me. She needs China because China manufactures 93% of everything in America, from her chips that go into her computers to her chips that go into her missiles to her chips that go into her control boards to her even t- to her American flag and over to her fatigues that she uses. That she needs China to help fund her deficit spending. And without China, boom goes the dynamite. This is what the analysis was from the article. They were talking about how America is so burdened by debt. Matter of fact, as we talk about this, let's go to something. This is from Peter Schiff. I'm going to let this play, okay? And this, Peter Schiff says, I was warning you for years about this. This is a long clip. This is about 10, 11 minutes, right? But I'm going to play this clip. And I might stop it and I might not. But I want you to hear what he's saying about boom goes the dollar, boom goes the economy, and how America's debt burden is something else. Pay close attention because this goal, and I have to tell you this because you've got to suit up for the approaching storm. Prepare. Make preparations now. Because this is going to be a hell of a storm, Category 10. That's so bad that it ain't no 5. It's off the scale. It ain't a 6. It ain't a 7. What's headed for America is a 10 plus and beyond. But I want you to pay close attention to this, okay? Here we go.
The dollar is going to collapse. This is a disaster, which has been even worse, which is doing more damage. This is certainly an example of the cure being far worse than the disease. The dollar is going to tank. Last time the dollar went up. And the reason the dollar went up is because the Fed convinced everybody that QE was temporary, that it was an emergency measure, that it would never be implemented again, that the Fed was going to shrink its balance sheet back down to where it was pre-financial crisis, that it was going to normalize interest rates, and everything was going to be fine. And the markets were dumb enough to believe the Fed. Now, I was warning for years that the Fed was lying, that what they were claiming they were going to do was actually impossible, that you cannot lever the economy up and then take away the cheap money and expect the economy that was propped up based on cheap money not to implode. When the government creates inflation, it's another way of arriving at the same result, right? So the government prints money and gives that new money to somebody else. You still have all of your money, but now that somebody else has money, but that other person didn't do any work, didn't produce any goods or services, they just have money. And so when they spend that money into the economy, they're bidding up the price of the goods and services that you need. And so now the price is going to rise to the point that your consumption will be diminished the same way it would have been diminished had the government taken your money. But they didn't take your money. They left you with your money. They just took the purchasing power away from your money and gave that purchasing power to somebody else. So that is what's going on. This is massive inflation. The Fed is monetizing debt on an unprecedented scale. It's not just government guaranteed debt. When they were doing QE the first time or the first three times, they were only buying U.S. Treasury debt or mortgages that had been guaranteed by the U.S. government. So every debt instrument the Fed was buying was sporting a U.S. government guarantee to make good on the payments of the principal and the interest. What the Fed is buying now is municipal bonds with no federal guarantee. They're buying corporate bonds. They're even going down in credit quality. They're even buying junk bonds. But I would argue that a lot of the investment grade bonds that they are buying are actually junk bonds in disguise because Moody's and Standard & Poor's don't have the guts to put a real credit rating on these bonds. So they're leaving them at maybe BBB- or the equivalent for Moody's. But an honest assessment of these bonds would put them in the junk category. And the only reason that a lot of these companies are not going bankrupt and a lot of these bonds aren't already in default is because the Fed is propping them up with artificially low interest rates and directly subsidizing the companies by buying their bonds. So the Fed is supporting this entire house of cards. Meanwhile, the underlying U.S. economy continues to deteriorate. It is a complete basket case now, not only thanks to COVID-19 itself, but thanks to the government's response. You know, the monetary and fiscal policy is what's going to make the economy much sicker. First of all, we have highly incentivized people not to return to work. The majority of people receiving extended and enhanced unemployment benefits are being paid more not to work than what they were earning when they still had jobs. Well, most people don't want to work. They only work to get the money. Well, if you can get more money and not work, hey, that's a great deal. In fact, even if they extend the benefits but diminish it so that you get paid the same amount not to work as you were earning when you were working, that's still a powerful incentive because most people don't enjoy their work, especially if you're a lower income. You're tolerating your work because you want the check. If you could stay at home and just stay in your pajamas and watch Netflix and make the same amount of money as if you had to go back and forth to work every day, get up early in the morning, get dressed, commute into work, and do a job that you hate, and then come back in the evening, you could stay at home all day and hang out with your kids or your wife, if that's what you want to do, or your friends. Most people would choose that than being part of the rat race. The financial crisis was kicked off because people defaulted on their mortgages. Well, now people are defaulting on a lot more than their mortgages. They're defaulting on everything. They can't pay their student loans. They can't pay their car loans. They can't pay their credit card debt. And it's not just Americans that can't pay their bills. Landlords can't pay their mortgage because they're not getting any rent. And even commercial landlords aren't getting rent. In fact, the whole real estate industry is imploding. Stores are shut down. Restaurants are closed permanently. They're not paying their rent. You know, clothing stores, movie theaters, gyms, all these companies are out of business. They're not paying their rent. The commercial real estate market is imploding. Right? At the same time, the residential real estate market's imploding. This is a disaster. Look at the banks. The U.S. banks continue to weaken. They're the weakest segment of the market. The only part of the U.S. market that's going up is a handful of overpriced tech stocks that are being bid up based on cheap money and momentum and a lot of shorts being squeezed out of their positions. But if you look at stocks that are actually trading on fundamentals, like the banks, they're a disaster. Because people buying them realize that their earnings are going to implode because they can't collect on their loans. The people they loan money to can't repay them. And the collateral behind those loans is collapsing. They can't make new loans because they can't make any money because rates are zero. So the banks are toast. All these big banks that we bailed out after the last financial crisis are in much worse shape. People are downplaying this. They think the banks are in better shape. They're not. The banks are in worse shape. We're even more vulnerable now than we were back then. Except what's ultimately going to crush the banks is going to be when the Fed loses control of interest rates and inflation sends interest rates higher, because that's what's going to happen. What's going to happen now is nobody is going to be dumb enough to believe, even if the Fed is arrogant enough to pretend, that the Fed could ever normalize interest rates, or that the Fed could ever shrink the balance sheet, which is now over $7 trillion. The national debt is $26.5 trillion, headed to $50 trillion. The balance sheet is headed up to $10, $20 trillion. And if the Fed couldn't shrink a $4.5 trillion balance sheet, how's it going to shrink a $10 trillion balance sheet? I mean, it's not even going to try. I mean, it's worse than impossible. And if the Fed couldn't normalize interest rates when the national debt was $16 trillion, how's it going to do it when it's $30 trillion or $50 trillion? See, the more debt we have, the harder it is to raise rates, and the more dependent we are on rates being at zero. In fact, pretty soon zero will be too high. The markets, we have so much debt that we can't even afford zero. We're going to have to make rates negative. So this whole thing is going to collapse probably before we even get to negative. The bottom's going to drop out of the dollar because we no longer have the expectation of normalization of rates, of a shrinking in the balance sheet. People are gonna realize that the Fed is locked in this monetary roach motel. They should have realized it when I first pointed it out, but they'll realize it now. And then everybody's gonna want out of the dollar because we have massive trade deficit, massive budget deficits. You know, we have $3-4 trillion a year deficits, which will probably go up to $5 trillion a year plus in a Biden administration. There is no way the world is gonna finance this. They're not gonna divert all those resources so that Americans can have all this government for free. You know, the rest of the world has their own problem. We were a rich country. We had rich people. Now we're a country full of, you know, paupers. Everybody is broke, and the government is giving them money. But here's something that people don't understand. The government doesn't have any money. If the people are broke, then the government is also broke. Because while it's true that the people support the government cannot support the people. But we're pretending the government can support the people because we've got the Fed. We got the Fed printing money. but the Fed can only print money that has value so long as the rest of the world is dumb enough to hold dollars as a reserve currency. Well, my bet is our luck has run out, that we've now upped the ante so much that there is no way. I mean, the world is going to back away from this. They're not going to continue. And you can see the dollar is already going down now. It's been a slow, steady decline. Soon it's going to turn into a complete collapse. I think when the dollar loses its reserve currency status, it's not going to be replaced by the euro. It's not going to be replaced by the yen or the Chinese RMB. None of those currencies deserve reserve currency status either. No currency should have that status. We need real money, just the way we had before the dollar became the reserve, and that's gold. And that's where we're headed. Gold's going to be remonetized. Gold hit over, you know, we're over $1,800 an ounce, about a 9-year high in the price of gold. We're headed to $5,000, $10,000, maybe more. We could go considerably higher. There's no way to remonetize gold in a meaningful way without gold being at least $10,000 an ounce, especially given all the money that's been created over the last decade. But when we go back to a sound monetary system, that is going to destroy an economy in the U.S. that is completely dependent on the reserve status of the dollar. That's the only way Americans can live beyond their means. That's how we can consume without producing. That's how we can borrow without saving, because the rest of the world produces for us. The rest of the world saves for us, and we just print money. Well, that privilege is going to come to an end, and we're going to have to deal with the consequences. But as investors, you need to know what's going to happen to asset prices in a world where the U.S. dollar is no longer the reserve currency and where American citizens are forced to live within their means. And that means that U.S. assets are going to be marked down considerably, led lower by the U.S. dollar. And on a relative basis, assets in other countries are going to increase in value. So what you want to do, right, is you want to get out of U.S. dollar-based assets before they're marked down and get into the other assets before they are marked up. So number one would be physical gold and silver. You want to own that pretty much instead of any currency. All currencies will lose purchasing power priced in gold and silver. So buy some physical gold and silver.
Oh, you heard this. He made some things. He made some poignant points. And he said, there's no way out of this. No way out of this. And I put the phrase no way out just to see what Google would have. And it says, you're standing in a passageway and there's no way out. This seems to mean that you are trapped in a passageway and cannot escape. So America is standing in the economic and political passageway that she cannot escape, right? And he said something that goes back to what I was saying to you before. He says, the world is tired. They're not going to finance this. The world is going to move away from this. You know, because this is how America does things. She exports inflation through her dollar. This is how she brings down governments, by manipulating her dollar. And they're tired of this because all she runs is deficits, right? Now listen to what he used. He said, the world, right? Now let's go back to in that chapter I read to you called America is Falling. Her doom is sealed. What did Elijah Muhammad say? Only America's modern and much worse. Ancient Babylon was destroyed by her neighboring nations. Well, how is America to be destroyed if God himself is going to destroy America? Well, to square up this with the neighboring nations, these are the nations that hold America's debt. And when they drop America's debt and drop her dollar, America will become a disillusioned, broken power that will be forced with these many wars of attrition that are taking place will be forced back in her own borders where God himself will deal with her. But the economic part, she will be broken economically. The nations will reject her and isolate her. Remember the fall of America, what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said? America will be isolated. Then she will be burned with fire. This economic and political isolation is underway as we speak. You heard it for yourself, right? So, with that said, I'm going to go quickly into something. There's only about 2 minutes. Listen closely.
No country in history that's gotten itself into this kind of situation has gotten out without a crisis or a semi-crisis. No country's ever said, okay, we've got a disaster on our hands. Let's start over and do it right. They're always forced to change, and usually when they change, it causes great collapse, and nobody really starts over the way they should. I don't know no country in history that's done it that way. America's not changed its conduct. Well, maybe it's changed its conduct a little bit, but virtually not at all, despite the fact it was the largest debtor nation in world history. The next 20 years, this is where we're going to put our money and our efforts and our incentives. Well, if the Chinese government is going to spend a lot of money on some sectors of their economy, I am too, because, you know, they got more money than I do. They're smarter than I am, more successful than I am. So certainly, things will come of it, and all you got to do is get out the list. So it's public information. I don't have any inside information here. They've told you we're going to spend a lot of money. But one thing they did say, they said, we're going to, if there's a question, we'll let the market decide how things should evolve. It's in sharp contrast to the U.S. and the U.K. and other places where they say, no, the government is smarter than the market. We don't want the market to decide because we're smarter than the market. Well, the Chinese, Red China, has said, we're going to let the market decide. And they're already letting people go bankrupt, which in the West we hardly let anybody go bankrupt. Healthcare, they say we're going to open up to the market. Railroads, they've said. Agriculture, they've said all the places that you can get out the list. Finance, they're going to open up finance. They said these are the things where there will be dramatic changes in the next 20 years. Agriculture has been a terrible business for 30 years. It's been so bad that the world has now consumed more than it's produced for the last decade. And when you consume more than you produce, it's got to come from inventory. We built up big inventories over those 30 years, but now the inventories worldwide are near historic lows. So we're running out of food. Worse than that, we're running out of farmers. But the average age of farmers in America is 58. In Japan, it's 66. In Canada, it's the oldest in recorded history. Australia, it's 58.
Do you see what's going on? The entire collapse, the entire, what they call the rules-based order, is under tremendous threat. It is collapsing. It is collapsing. Every sign points toward it. Now, I know the time is limited. Brothers and sisters, let me rush in and get another clip in. This will be a 12-minute clip. Then we'll be able to come back, read something, and we'll wrap it up. I won't keep you long, but remember, if you have not subscribed to the Red Pill Diary, go over to patreon.com/redpillDiaries, all one word, and sign up. Now, listen to this right here.
Live from the world headquarters of RT America in our nation's capital, this is the news with Rick Sanchez.
Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, here to welcome all of you who are tuning in around the world, including those of you who are watching us on your phones using the portable TV app. This is a new trend that you should know about and that, frankly, you may need to protect yourself from. It has to do with online loans. Americans and others are jumping all over these things, and we're not sure that's necessarily a good thing. Remember, we're already in the midst of a debt crisis in America, a debt crisis like none we've ever seen. Most of the time when we refer to this debt crisis, though, what we're talking about is the government. How in the world are you and I ever going to be able to repay the debt and the deficit levels that our government has borrowed us into to pay for the Iraq War, the Afghanistan wars, the meltdown of 2008, and now this COVID-19 pandemic? So let's start there. Let's start with the public debt. The national U.S. debt right now, the money borrowed by the government, stands at $27 trillion. And you want to know what your share of that is, by the way? How much do you owe? The U.S. debt of $27 trillion means that every single American owes or is born owing $80,000. Can you imagine? That is your gift from Uncle Sam as you come into the world. But again, that's the public debt that we all share as a result of what our government has done. Now I want to talk to you about the private debt that we have all created on our own. Let's start with the mortgage debt. There it is. Stands right now at about $13 trillion. But wait, there's more. The corporate debt, the money borrowed by all these giant corporations when money was so cheap, it stands at $10 trillion. Student debt loans, that debt is now coming out to about $1.5 trillion. A lot of trillions, huh? And then finally, there's consumer debt. That's your car loan, your credit card payments, et cetera, which now top $4.2 trillion. So America has gone debt crazy more than ever. And there seems to be no end in sight. But just as we thought it could not get any worse, we realize that it can. And in fact, it has. Why? Because there's a new way of borrowing money for Americans, and it's like nothing that we've really ever seen before. Americans can now borrow money with just the click of a mouse. It's called online lending. And the Trump administration is deregulating it, which could make some of these lenders who are trying to get their money out more aggressive. Look, amid the COVID-19 pandemic, Americans hurt by the economic crisis are borrowing $5,000 to $50,000 to $100,000 at interest rates of up to 30% and even more in some cases. So today, here, we ask, where's this going? Where's this heading? This is the news with Rick Sanchez, where we tackle trends that you need to know about, because it's time, we think, to do news again. Let's go with the list of the questions that we think you'll be asking tomorrow. Consumer debt through online lending. How high will it go? Is there really a new super battery that can last almost forever? Why is Vietnam joining India as countries now challenging China? All right. Right now in America, there is, as some financial experts have recently told me, and I try and talk to them all the time, here's what they say to me. They say there's a whole lot of bankers out there and a whole lot of very wealthy people with a whole lot of disposable money. At the same time, there is a whole lot of poor people and a whole lot of lower middle income people with a very severe need for money. Now, add to that the equation that I just gave you, another part, the online vehicle supported by our government to lend out lots of money at high rates. What do you have? You don't have to be Einstein to figure this one out. Here's my colleague and host of Boom Bust, Ben Swan, with what he's looking into.
Well, Rick, when we talk about consumer debt, the numbers are pretty staggering. We're talking about $4.2 trillion. That's how much debt Americans had racked up by the end of last year, and that does not include mortgage debt. But what's even more staggering than that is that many of these loans are not credit card debt like you might imagine, but instead high-interest personal loans being offered by fintech firms. Financial tech firms have now actually surpassed banks as the number one source of personal loans. These are loans that are offered when people have already racked up large amounts of debt and are looking to refinance. One of the easiest ways to do that is with a personal loan. Well, many of us have seen these loans before. They're easy to get. You just jump online, answer a few questions, and after a few clicks, you have a loan amount wired to your bank. But as an investigation by The Intercept has revealed, the surge in fintech loans over the past few years, combined with the economic shutdowns from the coronavirus response, mean that we are in store for a massive wave of loan defaults over the next few months. Many fintech companies offer loans in 4- and 5-figure ranges while charging interest rates that can range up to 25% or even 30% or more every year. At a time when the cost of funds to bankers remains at near historic lows, some fintechs charge annual interest rates between 160 and 299%. That's in payday lender territory. But the fintech industry is operating at a scale that rivals the storefront payday lending industry has not seen before. Of course, that is not to say that these loans are all bad. In some cases, they absolutely help families and individuals who desperately need a lifeline, especially at a moment when rent is due, existing loans are coming due, and 50 million Americans are out of work.
All right, and Ben stays with us now because I want to ask him some questions to drill down on your report. And also joining us is Jeff Deist. He's the president of the Mises Institute and former chief of staff to Congressman Ron Paul. Ben, just to be clear, these online fintech loans that you just taught us about, that was already a problem before the COVID-19 pandemic, right? So this might be like pouring gasoline on a fire, this situation, no?
Well, I think to some level it is. I mean, you're really looking at two things. As I said at the end there, there are people who legitimately need these loans and have been able to access them and get to them because they're easy to get to. They're able to bypass kind of the traditional banking system that is not working as their friend, but neither are these loans. Let's be honest about it. Mm-hmm. These loans are there to make money, as we said, very high interest rates. What's really interesting is that during this pandemic time, the Trump administration has kind of loosened rules on how states are able to regulate those interest rates. So California, New York, and Illinois, they have all actually sued the OCC, essentially saying that they're violating the rules that prevent such high interest rates. So what could happen is this, that right now we've seen a lot, but going into a few more months as we start to come out of this pandemic and people are way behind in terms of economic prosperity, you would imagine that with those rates now lifted, there's a lot of people who are going to find themselves trapped in debt.
How much debt can we handle, and when does the bubble burst, Mr. Deist? I can't help but look at this situation and think, just how high can we go between the public debt and the private debt? This is crazy. Isn't it?
Rick, it's a lot higher than it was in 2008 after the last crash. We basically have about $14 trillion worth of household debt in this country, about 10 of it being mortgage debt.
Yeah.
The other four, which is increasing, is personal debt, the kind of fintech debts that you're talking about. It includes about $1.5 trillion in student loans. And, you know, the tremendous irony here is that there's still a market. No matter what the Fed does, no matter what the Treasury tries to do, no matter what the Trump administration tries to do, there's still going to be high-risk folks. And whoever lends money to them is going to want to charge them an exorbitant 15, 20, 25, 30% rate of interest. So that never really goes away. But on the flip side, the people who are actually connected to the Fed, connected to the federal government, can borrow money at historically low, basically zero interest rates. So hedge funds, investment banks, Goldman Sachs. So on the one hand, money's never been cheaper, but for the poorest people among us, and where is Trump this year? For the poorest people among us, the most desperate, they're paying over 20%. It's absolutely.
I would imagine, Ben, that we should, as a country, come up with some kind of vehicle that balances this situation. Because I imagine if you have such desperate people who need loans, and all these banks who, by the way, as I reported, they've got tons of money on their hands. They don't know what the hell to do with it. So they're trying to get it into the hands of poor folks, even if they think they're going to be a loss leader for them in some cases. We need to have some kind of regulation to that, don't we?
Well, we absolutely need to have regulation to that, and I think that we have to have rules that say you can't create these predatory loans. We've seen it happen for a long time. The question, though, becomes how do you create a system that involves everyone? Because many times when government says, well, we're going to regulate this one industry, then another one pops up in its place. Remember, payday loans did not really exist before regulations came for credit card companies. When the credit card companies got hit with regulations on how they could lend, payday loans came out of that, an even more predatory system. So many times this happens. I think what's so attractive, though, about the system of fintech is how fast and convenient it is. There is no reason why that same system cannot be applied and yet give people decent and you know, ethical interest rates.
I am surprised, Professor Deitz, by what's going on right now in the country with people going out and buying houses like crazy, buying cars like crazy, taking out loans like crazy, while at the same time we're going through an economic situation and people are getting help still from the government. So how do those things all add up? I just don't get it. Do you?
Well, apparently July was one of the biggest months in history for the sales of the Ford F-150 pickup truck.
Yeah.
They both know a lot of those sales are fueled by very low or 0% rates offered by Ford Motor Company Credit. So car dealerships are happy about that. But, You know, what's strange here is that, as you mentioned, banks are just absolutely awash in cash. Something to do with it. They're getting it from the Fed at very favorable rates, and then they turn around, they add a few percentage points and lend it to you or me, hopefully at a you know, for a mortgage refinance or something like that at a low rate. But at the same time, the last time interest rates on poor people were this high, let's say the late 70s, early 80s, you know, those same poor people could go have a savings account at a simple savings account at a bank and get 15 or 18 or 20% return. You know, now if you have a check in your savings account, you're lucky to even get 1% on it. So we've never had this kind of disconnect. And I lay it at the feet of central bankers. I think they're responsible.
I think you might be right, and your point's a darn good one. My thanks to...
So I know our time is running low, but I'm going to have to go over a little bit because there's a couple of things I want to get to, okay? So you heard what he was talking about. He was adding up the debt. Now, this is the public debt. And while he was adding up the debt, something struck me. So I said, let me go back and look at because you remember when we used to do the shows a year ago and a year before that, and I was telling you about the global economy was like $50 and $60 trillion. So I wanted to do, while he was talking, I wanted to see what they estimated the global economy to be now in the midst of, now listen, in the midst of a worldwide global collapse, right, due to massive amounts of debt. You look at the economies around the world, they're collapsing because of debt, all right? So me, as he was talking about the debt, I was adding up the debt, the public debt that he was saying that. We're not talking about the. Remember, in about 10 years ago, a professor said that the U.S. unfunded liabilities was $200 and some trillion. Now, if you do the math, you got to multiply that multiple times up to the date. So that leads us into close to a quadrillion dollars in unfunded liability and true debt. Now, as Ben Swan was giving his take on stuff, and as the host was talking about things, I added up what he was saying. And all the debt that's public that he was talking about was $56 trillion. All right? $56 trillion. Now, remember how I told you when America is swamped by debt, she slyly ups her GDP numbers? Well, this is what happened to the global economy. And also, America's GDP stands at $22 trillion, so she says, right? If her public debt is $56 trillion or $57 trillion, how in the hell is she going to pay that? That's double the amount of her GDP right now. Right now. That's not including the unfunded liabilities, which can balloon anywhere from $300 trillion to $250 trillion. Right? And then we look at the off-book debt of the derivative market. 2 years ago, it stood between $2 and $5 quadrillion. Well, if the debt crisis has exploded exorbitantly, then we have to multiply that multiple times, right? So we're into the tens or maybe even the 20s of quadrillions of dollars when you put it like that. We don't analyze this. I know the time is running out, but you're gonna give me a little bit more time. All right? I did all this talking with you all. I've been laying out the base, so you're gonna give me a little more time to talk to you all. And I have a lot to do when I get off the air. Okay? So I'm putting myself behind the eight ball to extend the show a little bit. But listen, so $56 trillion with eight. Now I want you to understand. Do you believe that if you were making $50,000, right, do you believe that this government would give you $100,000, not the government, but a bank would give you $100,000 loan with no interest? Huh? That's not how it works, right? But the government has been flooding the banks with money to buy up debt. And the banks are awash with money, then they turn it over to their colleagues, and then the colleagues go and they get it for free. Then they go lend it to you, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% interest rate. That's predatory, right? According to the dictionary, the word predatory means seeking to exploit and oppress others, right? That's what America and the Western system is about. The system cannot go on unless it expands debt. To expand debt, that means other people have to take on new debt, and then more debt, and more debt. So it's sucking the life out of everybody. That is a succubus, a vampire, a leech. That's what the system is, right? I just want you to pay attention. Now, so as I said to you all, I was doing something. I was looking at it in 2015, I believe it was. Excuse me. Let me look at it. I'm doing it right now. The global economy was $60 trillion. $60 trillion, right? That was in 2015, so they say, and beyond. Which we know that they have finagled the numbers because the debt continued to grow. Well, then they tell us that the global economy now is $80 trillion. Now, I'm asking you this because I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I'm not the butter knife. Never forget that. How in the hell can the global economy grow by $20 trillion when the debt is the greatest debt in the history of the world economy? Huh? I'm asking you this stuff. When all of these governments have taken on more debt than they could ever pay back, how can the economy grow from $60 to $80 trillion, the global economy? And how can America, being a $22 trillion economy, sustain herself with $56 trillion in debt, public debt, and close to a quadrillion in private debt on top of quadrillions in derivatives? I'm asking you this. And if this is impossible, I'm telling you right now, you better suit up for the coming storm. Because this approaching storm is going to be something unlike anything you've ever seen before. I'm going to read a segment or a section of an article, okay? And then we're going to close off with me reading a section of Message to the Black Man. Just bear with me, okay? I'm talking to you. I want you to listen to this. Buy lots of food and store it in some place safe because very difficult times are approaching, by Michael Snyder. He says, I'm just going to be very blunt with you. Things have already gotten quite crazy, but they are going to get even crazier. Global food supplies have already gotten tight, but they are going to get even tighter. Remember what Jim Rogers said on that clip I played? That farmers are going extinct. They've exhausted all of the food supplies that they stored up for 30 years. Listen to closely what it says here. When even the UN starts using the word biblical, remember I was using that long before they did, to describe the famine that the world is facing. Remember Elijah Muhammad told you that there will be a worldwide famine, right? Now let's go. He says, when even the UN starts using the word biblical to describe the famine that the world is facing, that is a sign that the hour is very late. Thankfully, we are not facing famine in the short term here in the United States, but temporary shortages of certain items have already been popping up, and food prices are aggressively shooting higher. Earlier today, my wife stopped by the grocery store to pick up a couple things, and one particular item that used to cost about $12 was now $20 instead. But thanks to the Federal Reserve, this is about as low as food prices are going to get. The Fed seems absolutely determined to crank up inflation, and that is going to have very serious implications during the times that are ahead. Right now, we have a window of opportunity before the next wave of trouble comes along. And I would greatly encourage you to use this window of opportunity to buy lots of food and store it somewhere safe. Now, I read that first paragraph of that article, transition to our closing segment, Rise and Fall of the Christian West. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad writes, "The fall of America is now visible and understandable, not only in the eyes of scholars and scientists, but even in the eyes and understanding of the ignorant. Long has the law been gradually removing the power of the great and mighty America, while few have noticed it. This has been done by degrees. See, it wasn't done all at one time. It was done while you were not paying attention. It was like water from a waterfall constantly hitting that rock below. You look at that boulder and you say, my God, that boulder is heavy. My God, that boulder is impregnable. But over time, the drip-drip effect of the water eats away at the stability and the cohesiveness of that boulder or that rock, right? So Muhammad says, this has been done by degrees, and they do not perceive it. The Holy Quran says, he brings powerful nations to a naught, and when it is discovered, it is like a growth of cancer that has been eaten away at the body for many years while the patient was unaware of it. So now that they have discovered that fiat currency is of no value, and while they have discovered that America runs nothing but deficits and debt, and they've discovered that the Western world is in the greatest crisis they've ever been in, and while they've discovered that there is a food supply shortage, and that nations are now gathering together against the Western order, or the so-called international rules-based order, quote-unquote. As they discovered this, it was like a cancer because it started small, but it has metastasized the world over. And America, in her hubris, and Europe, in her colonial hubris, were unaware of it because they thought that they were greater than everyone else, the international community, as they say. Today, though, as Muhammad says, it is very visibly understood that the fall of America cannot be checked. Why, Elijah Muhammad? Because the foundation has been removed. What is the foundation? The dollar supremacy, the dollar hedge, the dollar as the world reserve currency, and the replacement, or the so-called thought replacement, being the euro, because it has been undermined by the great debt burden of the so-called European Union. You see, the cancer, the economic cancer, has eaten away at the body of the so-called international rules-based order, or the international community, which is really called America, Europe, and the West. There is no going back. We now stand on the threshold of change. This is the end of America. This is the end of European power. This is the end of white global domination. So I say to you all who are listening, and who would listen, suit up for the approaching storm, because this is going to be worse than a category. Be worse than any storm that you've ever witnessed before, because this storm is coming and it will not let up, because it is on the order of Almighty God in person. Always remember, with an undying love and passion for the liberation, the upliftment, and the redemption of 68 million of our kind, first here in America, then the billions around the globe, know that your brother Rashid Muhammad loves you to life. I don't love you to death. Hell, we've been in the throes of death. I love you to life, but the love that I have for you pales in comparison to the love that my God, my Savior, and my Redeemer, Almighty God Allah, who came in the person of one Master Farad Muhammad, has for you, and his messenger has for you, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, and that mighty, mighty Nation of Islam has for you. Until we next speak again, stay strong, stay true, but above all things, stay righteous, and go sign up and go support the movement. I love you all. Assalamu alaikum.
mentioned on our next show, please visit trumpetoftruth.wordpress.com and click on the Blog Talk Radio button. Until we converse again, always remember, no matter how low society may have rendered you, the wisdom of the one true God will lift you on high. May God bless and keep you. The Star and Crescent Report was created and directed by Rashid Muhammad, produced by Nicole Muhammad, and hosted by Rashid Hiram, 1555 Muhammad. Have a blessed day.
That I like the moon I miss. Day to day, the rosy.